Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins. We are officially halfway through the year 2022 now, so we're going to take a look back this week at a couple of the biggest issues this country has seen so far this year. Number one, of course, being the Supreme Court poised to overturn Roe versus Wade and what ramifications that is going to have on this country. We're going to revisit our interview with Heather Digby Parton on that subject. We're also going to talk about Ron DeSantis and what he has done to the state of Florida and what he could do to the entire country if he runs for president and wins in 2024. Author Cliff Schechter is going to rejoin us for that conversation. And if you want the full Ring of Fire podcast every single week, go sign up and become a member at rofpodcast.com. And for Ring of Fire every single day of the week, subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. Now, before we revisit a couple of interviews this week, I do want to start by saying, one, of course, as I mentioned in the open, we are halfway through the year, so it's a perfect time to look back on some of the conversations we've had about some of the biggest issues of the year so far. But more importantly, this is a bit out of necessity. I had to travel out of town recently for a wedding, and upon arrival home, tested positive for COVID. I'd been 2.5 years, triple vaxxed, playing it safe, had nothing, no problems, no scares, nothing, until this trip and coming back. And I'm not feeling great, but I'm certainly not as bad as it could be. Obviously, being vaccinated, you know, and boosted, I do definitely believe that helped. So, again, we're revisiting a couple of older interviews this week, just out of necessity. Unfortunately, I do not have it in me to be able to fully produce a new show this week. And I apologize to everyone for that. But before we get into that, let me also add, continue to take care of yourselves, folks. This pandemic is not over. Okay. Just because you can fly without a mask, please be smart. Please be safe. Please do not make foolish mistakes. Do not think, oh, well, it's not in the news. I'm not seeing headlines. Everything is okay. Trust me. I've got a household filled with COVID right now, kids with COVID. It is unpleasant. It is not fun. And please continue to protect yourselves. So, having said that, without further ado, let's get into this week's interviews. Last week's leaked draft of the Supreme Court decision regarding the overturning of Roe v. Wade immediately sent people thinking, what kind of horrible slippery slope could we be on at this point? Well, unfortunately, we didn't have to wait long because we're already seeing the slippery slope emerge. Joining me to talk about this, our good friend Heather Digby Parton from Salon.com. And Heather, oh my God, in just the last, what, 8, 9, maybe even 10 days at this point, we have already seen these Republicans kick it into high gear because they feel like they've essentially been given a green light to go after not just pregnancy and abortion, but just all of women's health right now. And this is a truly terrifying slope. Again, in just a week, we've already seen this start develop. It's terrifying.
It is terrifying. And what, you know, we've seen this sort of growing over time. I mean, you know, there have been things going on in the past where you had, you've had these trigger laws that have been put into place over the past couple of years. There have been this kind of, you know, acceleration of the idea of there being no exemptions for rape and incest. I mean, these things have sort of been coming along. And of course, once the announcement was made, those people, unlike the people in Washington who were kind of walking around very, kind of delicately trying to figure out how the best way to deal with this, because they do know that is, you know, they may, those people may be dancing in the streets, their base, the other side is also be energized and mobilized by this as well. So they've been worried about it. But the activists and the people who are working in the states, which is where all the action's going to be, if they do end up overturning Roe, which really looks like they are, they are absolutely excited. I mean, you had things like in Louisiana, they immediately set out to pass a new law that would make abortion homicide. And theoretically, anyway, at least from the way it looks, that this could also target the woman who, you know, has the abortion. I mean, there are laws, there's talk of trying to find some way to keep women from crossing state lines if they're pregnant, which would somehow require some sort of tracking of women, because how else would you do such a thing? And, you know, this is just going on and on. There's an awful lot of it, and it just exploded from the minute that the leak, you know, was revealed. And you can see exactly. Meanwhile, the Republicans, you've got Sean Hannity saying last night on his show, these people are hysterical. Nothing's going to change. And you just, you know, I mean, well, it tells you that they're nervous about it, right? But the fact that he would even say that to his own audience, which, you know, that's where they all gather, right? This is where all the anti-abortion people are. And the fact that he would say that, I found very interesting. I mean, they are very nervous about this. They're very cautious about this. And there is a split within the Republican coalition on this. That a lot of the people who have to run statewide and are worried about the election coming up in 2022, in November, I mean, they are concerned about this because they know that it's going to be a problem. So it's been very interesting to watch this happen. Democrats and, you know, pro-choice, pro-abortion, you know, abortion rights advocates are absolutely right to be up in arms and upset, because this is happening. It's happening all over the country. It's happening in all these red states. And you can bet that there's going to be lots of pressure put on people, even in blue states, if only the additional pressure, the financial pressure of trying to accommodate people from all over the country who are going to have to come there to get their, to get abortions and other reproductive care. So this is a very, very volatile situation.
It is. And, you know, I did a live stream, you know, immediately after this, you know, decision was leaked here. And the thing I mentioned at the time, I said, you just watch, the first thing they're going to come after is making it illegal for a woman to leave the state to go to a different area to get an abortion. And of course, we've already seen, even before this leak, we saw inklings of that, like in Texas, right? Texas is an area where they had said, well, what if now women just go north of the border and try to do this? Okay, well, we'll work on that. And now they want to, you know, put a woman to death in Texas. That is the new proposed legislation. Like, we'll kill you if you get an abortion. They want to get the death penalty for that. They're so pro-life, you know, the tweet said, they're so pro-life, they'll kill you for it. and that really is what we're dealing with here, because they don't care about women at all. All they pretend, of course, to care about is a fetus, you know, or even based on these abortion bans, a cluster of dividing cells is what they pretend to care about. Of course, if they cared, they'd be offering prenatal care. They'd be offering, you know, free ultrasounds and sonograms and all of these things to actually help women who are pregnant. But no, they're not doing anything other than saying, we don't care if you were raped. It's an opportunity. One Republican told us it's an opportunity if you're raped and get pregnant from it. There's no reasoning with these people at all. I mean, they have totally gone off the deep end on this. So I don't even know how we have real conversations about it when they're clearly not willing to listen and rationalize things like rape as an opportunity. There's no talking to that.
Absolutely. And the thing is that, of course, there's no compromising on this, because the compromises already took place over the course of the last 50 years. Roe itself was a compromise. They did a balancing act, the three trimesters. And then the first trimester, a woman had a right to have an abortion for any reason. The second trimester the states were allowed to regulate on the basis of health and other things. And in the third trimester, they were allowed to do an abortion in rare cases where the woman's health and life were in danger. These are things that were built into Roe versus Wade. They came along with Casey, and actually, you know, did even more compromise. And, you know, you couldn't do an undue burden, but they were allowed to put all kinds, you know, all these ultrasound bills and all these things like, you know, requiring 72-hour waiting periods and notifying people and all this other stuff. There was tons of compromise already built into America's, you know, crazy quilt of abortion laws all over the country. So that is clearly compromise is not going to do it. They were never going to agree that abortion in any way was going to be allowed. They are seeking a total ban on abortion. And in fact, immediately, and it's funny because even before the leak came out, and I just find it such a weird coincidence, but it's true. I think it was 2 days before the leak was revealed. There was a story in the Washington Post about how they were strategizing on the right among activists and members of Congress to invoke a national ban. That was already in the works before this leak. They knew that, you know, it was a good chance that Roe was going to be overturned, and they've been planning for this. Now, Mitch McConnell, rarely does he make a mistake, but he made one this week. Because, or maybe he didn't. Maybe he was just trying to have it both ways. Maybe he's that Machiavellian. But he came out in an interview with USA Today and said, you know, it's possible that we could have a national ban, but I will not agree to break the filibuster for any single issue. Well, that's nonsense. He broke the filibuster just to couple of months ago to get the debt ceiling raised. He broke the filibuster for the Supreme Court. I mean, clearly that is, you know, and you can take his word for what it is, which is garbage. But nonetheless, he came out and put this national ban kind of on the agenda, and people kind of panicked about it. Republicans did. And, oh, God, you know, that's the last thing we want right now. You know, people are really going to get upset. I mean, you can just see how, you know, how difficult this terrain is for Republicans who know that Roe versus Wade is extremely popular and supported by the vast majority of people, even in their own states. Where this really hurts them is in these places where in Senate races. Now in the House, it may not be as easy. Those are, you know, it's been gerrymandered to death, and most probably the majority in those Republican districts are going to go along with whatever, you know, ridiculous promises these people are making about abortion. But in statewide races, this is going to be tough. Now, it's governor's races, and it's going to hit Senate races coming up in the fall. And they're obviously very nervous about it. And so, you know, one of the things I wrote this week was about how Democrats, they're doing this show vote. In fact, it may be happening as we speak. I don't know. It's supposed to happen today, in which they get Republicans in the Senate on the record voting against Roe versus Wade. And my feeling on that is, who didn't know they were against Roe versus Wade? It's in the party platform. I mean, that is not revealing anything. What would reveal something, however, would be if Chuck Schumer put on the agenda some votes about, do you want to outlaw women crossing state lines? Do you want to, you know, do you want to allow people to be prosecuted for miscarriages? Do you want to, all these things that we've just been talking about? Do you think that abortion could be called murder? Do you want women to be prosecuted for having an abortion? Those specific things, those very, very specific extremist positions, which are happening everywhere, it's not hypothetical, it's real. That's where the Republicans need to be put on the record, that we know they don't want Roe versus Wade. But what nobody knows is where they stand on the rest of this stuff, which is the slippery slope, as you put it, which is really, really slippery right now. So I think that I would hope that the Democrats would get, you know, a little more savvy about this. Maybe they're planning it. You know, I don't know that, but it just struck me as that, you know, this, oh, we're going to get them on the record about Roe versus Wade. And I'm going, oh, well, that's going to be a shocker. I wonder what they'll do, you know?
Yeah. It's funny because I had said the exact same thing. I said, we know where they, so we know where pretty much everybody stands on this. We don't need them on the record. They're all very openly on the record.
Exactly.
There's a wonderful website called On the Issues where you can look up any member of Congress and literally see where they stand on the issues. So this is not a mystery for anybody. We know what these people are going to do. We know what Mitch McConnell has said. And you know, he did attempt to walk it back a little bit. Because mm-hmm. he did come out and he said, well, you know, we're probably never going to have the numbers, you know, so it's not going to actually ever happen. But that to me kind of says that, Mitch McConnell, again, as you said, this very calculated individual, I have given him a ton of credit over the years. He's an evil bastard, but he is very politically savvy. He messed up this week, and that isn't something we usually see. And like you said, it shows how flustered they are. And this may end up for them being one of those situations where be careful what you wish for, because now you've got this on your hands. One, mm-hmm. you're not going to be able to run on overturning Roe v. Wade anymore, because that's going to be gone. So you're going to have to go to the more extremes. And the more extreme you get, the better chance you have at turning off some of those moderates, which could cost you big time. So maybe it backfires in that respect. Again, that's, you know, got to wait to see what happens. Again, wait to see if Roe v. Wade even does get overturned. Maybe there's a shocking thing and it won't happen. I have no faith in that, but it's still a slight possibility, I guess.
Well, it is a slight possibility, very slight, I would say as well. But let's just say that if that happens, you haven't seen protests in front of a justice's house until you see protests from the right at the justices who would vote not to overturn Roe. Because I can just imagine, especially now after this has been leaked, just how, you know, and they have a history of violence. Whereas these protests that are at the justices' house, at Alito, and I guess it was Kavanaugh's house, and then they did some chalk. A little chalk art in front of Susan Collins's house up in Maine. And you know, everybody's having a hissy fit over it. And I mean, these just couldn't, they were sitting there saying that Alito likes Nickelback. I mean, that was the kind of protest they had.
Well, and Kavanaugh's neighbors were feeding people.
Yeah.
They said, here, have some food. We've organized this.
We've got some cheese and wine for you. I mean, you know, these were hardly, you know, January 6th level. You know, nobody was talking about hanging Alito in front of his house, but they, you know, you would think that they were by what how the right is portraying it. It is a complete hysteria over this thing. And that's, again, it's another example. It's just like the fact that when the leak was revealed, the first thing they did was try and misdirect from the substance of the leak to the leak itself and suggest that, you know, this is the worst thing that's ever happened. It's a complete, you know, degradation of our institutions and blah, blah, blah. And they went nuts on that for a few days. Now it's these protests, but it's all the same thing. It's trying to misdirect people and trying to keep their people, you know, sort of focused in that direction and trying to keep, I think, the mushy middle that they think is there. And the truth is there really isn't one. I mean, pro-Roe is 60-70% of the population. And they're going to try and convince people that that it's the Democrats who are extreme and want to, you know, change everything. But, you know, that is not, it defies reality in a moment where they just overturned Roe versus Wade to expect that the people who have, you know, there are some people who have, you know, some reservations about Roe and whether or not, you know, the third trimester, you know, there should be allowed any kind of abortions. And, you know, there's a lot of that sort of, you know, it's not an easy topic. And for a lot of people, it's kind of, you know, but at the end of the day, they're saying, no, look, you know, women have to be the ones to make the decision. That's ultimately where that comes down, is that, I don't know, I don't think the government should be making that decision for individual women. They don't know their circumstances. They can't know what the real situation is. We're not going to do that. That seems to be the sort of common sense view of most Americans. So they can sit there all they want and say that Democrats are extreme and they're doing this and that and the other, and they want abortions. What are they saying now? They want abortions up until the moment of birth. And you're going, what are you talking about? That doesn't even make any sense. I mean, it's like, and I think, you know, most people have some, you know, experience with childbirth, if it's only their own, you know, I mean, we all know what happens there. And the idea that they're saying that, that's just a ridiculous statement. And it works for their own rabid base and their own anti-abortion zealots. But it's not going to work on people who have a common sense view of how this is going to work. And I think they know it. I think that there's just this, I just sense this desperation to try and get a handle on how best to beat this thing back. I'm a little bit surprised, to tell you the truth, because they're generally pretty good at planning. Democrats, not so much. But the Republicans, I generally think that they, I would have thought that they had a, you know, strategy for how to deal with Roe if it came down in June. I mean, the only difference here is that, you know, it was the end of April instead of June. I mean, it's not a big deal. We all sort of knew what was coming, and so did they. And yet here they are kind of flailing a bit. So I find that kind of interesting and maybe just a little bit hopeful that that they're knocked off their game here enough that the Democrats, if they're smart and they move fast and they you know, kind of get their activist base going and really work it with intelligence. And, you know, maybe today's the vote, there'll be some good speeches and some things that will make a difference. But, you know, I just hope that they kind of keep that going, because they have to be on the offense with this issue. And with the January 6th committee hearings that are going to come up in a month or so, that's another place where they can do it. I mean, the Democrats have got to use what they have, and they're pretty potent. You know, both, you know, gee, assault on democracy, you know, destroying women's rights. I mean, it seems like they have some stuff to work with here, which is not necessarily always true in a midterm like this.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they've got a ton of red meat for their base.
Yes.
They just have to figure out how to properly use it. And, you know, to your point where you're talking about these conservatives kind of being caught on their heels, not understanding what to do, it makes me wonder a bit, because all we can do is wonder, I guess, about the identity of the leaker, their political leanings and their motivations. Makes me wonder if maybe these conservatives are a little upset, like, hey, why didn't you leak it to us first? Why didn't you let us strategize a little bit about it? Because mathematically speaking, we obviously have a 6-3 Supreme Court. So you've got far more conservatives up there than you do liberals. So just mathematically, it would lean towards it was likely a conservative. Now, obviously, math doesn't play much into this. It could have been anybody. But I will be interested to see if it comes out that this was somebody working for one of the conservative justices. Are Republicans going to be still be as vicious in calling for this individual to be thrown in jail and fired and never hired anywhere again, ostracized from the country? They've accused this person of treason, whoever it is. That, to me, honestly, is the biggest reason I really do hope that it's a conservative. Beyond that, I don't care. I just want to see how they would react if it turns out this was, in fact, somebody working for a conservative judge. I think that would be the only fun we could get out of this at all.
Well, that's for sure. I mean, and it would be fun. I think, you know, judging from what we've been reading over the last few days, or since the leak was published, is that, you know, it looks more and more like it was a conservative. And the reason that they say that is because there were leaks before this to the Wall Street Journal. There was leak to Politico. There were, and to the Washington Post, which somebody was talking, right? I mean, somebody was saying something even before the leak. Since the leak, there's been a cascade of commentary from people close to the conservative justices saying things like, well, they were really mad at John Roberts after the, I can't remember which one of the cases it was, but, you know, a lot of stuff coming out with some really bad blood, not with the liberals. It's bad blood with John Roberts. I think that is, you know, so my feeling is if we find out who the leaker is, if it's John Roberts, or one of his clerks or aides or whatever, they will be, you know, they'll go vicious on him. But if it was one of their people, they'll probably backpedal. I mean, I don't know. And I'm with you. I don't care. A leak is a leak. This could be a whistleblower. It could be somebody trying to manipulate the whole vote. I mean, today, I think there was in the Washington Post another leak saying that the vote had not changed and that no dissents or any other opinions had even circulated. Now, that might be a lie. I mean, maybe that's just somebody saying something to try and manipulate the situation, or maybe it's true. And, you know, which would indicate, you know, what? I don't even know. But, you know, there's a lot of that kind of thing going on now where you can see the court itself And it seems to not have, I mean, I haven't heard anything about the liberals. Everybody knows what they're going to do, right? I mean, they're going to write a dissent, blistering dissent against the overturning of Roe versus Wade, but it won't make any difference. And, you know, unless Roberts does succeed in bringing over one of the five, you know, one of the, you know, Trumpers and Alito and Thomas, which is obviously not going to happen. You know, this is the argument, if there is one, the court churning, this court, you know, losing its majestic, you know, mystery and all this other stuff people are talking about. This is among them. They're fighting among themselves. This is where that the court itself is having the conservatives, this six conservative majority on the court. They're fighting among themselves the same way that the Republicans externally are fighting among themselves. It's happening all over the place. I mean, this is what's driving me crazy about this, you know, this kind of, you know, gloomy Gus sort of Democratic view, you know, say, oh, we're going to lose. Joe Biden's not popular. Inflation and gas prices. Me, me, me. I'm like, have you seen what's happening to your rivals? They are at each other's throats over here. They're absolutely, and you've got Trump coming in. I mean, the elections last night, you know, it was a split. Even Steve, Trump guy won in West Virginia, lost big in Nebraska. You know, this, that just shows, I mean, this is, they are having a civil war within their own party. And the Democrats have got to just get off this negative sort of, you know, self-defeating attitude and recognize that they, as you just said, they've got a lot of red meat there if they're willing to, you know, throw it at people and say, here, enjoy, you know, we got some stuff for you.
Well, and that's what they should be doing right now, too. I mean, one of the things that always drives me crazy, you know, any cycle really, is the fact that we only start seeing these ads once we're in the heart of the campaign. There is no reason for the Democratic Party to not be funding nationwide ad campaigns right now on TV, you know, showing clips of Marjorie Taylor Greene or showing clips of Matt Gaetz or talking about this, you know, horrific legislation, using their positions of power. Like Josh Hawley today comes out and says, I've made legislation to punish Disney for being woke. Like, that is an abuse of power. There's an ad. There's an ad in every single one of these people. Talk about the allegations against Matt Gaetz. You know, talk about Mitch McConnell and all of the horrible things he's done. The Kevin McCarthy tapes that you and I talked about a couple weeks ago. The Lindsey Graham tapes that are now out there. Good God, there's 10 ads right there. You could produce them in 24 hours, put them on TVs across the country to show people. Because the thing I always like to remind people, and this is kind of disappointing, but the majority of people in this country do not consume political news every day. So a lot of this, what is daily for you and I, for everybody listening to this program as well, we do consume it. But we also sometimes forget that not everybody else does. Right. And that's why the Democrats have to get better on messaging, because I think they do assume like, well, no, everybody knows these things. They really don't. Most people wake up, they go to work, they get the kids to school, they come home, they do dinner, they watch TV, you know, a couple of sitcoms, and they go to bed. That's their daily routine. They're not, you know, unfortunately, they're not watching Ring of Fire. They're not all reading Salon.com. They're not all on YouTube or MSNBC or CNN. We have to remind everybody and sometimes educate them fully about all the things that, you know, you and I just come across every day, and we try to digest it and distill it for folks. Too many people aren't getting those messages, but that's on the national party. You know, we can only do so much, and we do. We get too far into it where we get sick of it sometimes. But the national party's got to start funding these ads and get those messages out to everybody in this country as quickly as possible, too.
Honestly, I think you're absolutely right. And I think it is potent. People don't look. Most people don't watch Fox News. I mean, there are even among on the right, you know, what do they get? Maybe, you know, 3 or 4 million viewers and a night on something like Tucker Carlson. I mean, that's not a lot of people. And granted, it all, you know, it comes out in other places and they have right wing media and all that stuff. But I mean, the fact is that if you did just a campaign that you just laid out, which is have all these things that people, they're actually saying, it could be just called the in their own words campaign. nothing but just what they're saying. You know, you don't have to really even editorialize much. Just put it out there. This is what they're saying. Now, it's true. Maybe some people on the right who, you know, haven't seen it would go, wow, that Lindsey Graham, he's really cool. Or maybe they'd say, yeah, gee, you know, that sounds good. You know, that really sounds good. Not letting women cross state lines. I'm for that. But honestly, I think far more people who aren't able to pay attention to news, that just their lives are full. They have too much going on, that they'd be shocked by hearing some of this stuff. It's so far out, outside of any mainstream that we have known in our lives up until now. This is way, way out there. These people are talking about crazy stuff. And they acted crazy on January 6th. And they elected a crazy man as president, which everybody saw and voted against, by the way. Yeah. You know, I mean, they need to be reminded. That's one reason why I'm not upset about Trump coming back on Twitter.
I'm not either. I think it's great.
To me, I think let him go out there. You know, you remember every article where anybody was saying, you know, well, I don't care for what Trump does on Twitter. I don't like his tweets. But other than that, I really like his policies. Well, if they don't like his tweets, let's give him some of his tweets. That's my view on it. I mean, I know a lot of people disagree with that you shouldn't, you know, give him a platform or whatever. But he's the 2024 nominee, almost certainly. Yes, you have to expose what he's saying and doing. And it's as crazy as ever, by the way. If anybody here watching this is not paying attention to Donald Trump, I have to because it's my job. I know you do too. He's as loony as he's ever been, and even a little bit, you know, more than he was before, especially with this stuff about the 2020 election, which he cannot let go of. So, you know, people need to hear that. I think people, you know, in their own words, I think that's a great national campaign. Just let people hear it.
Well, and that is one thing Republicans are very, very good at, is always just kind of shooting themselves in the foot. You know, whenever they could have an upper hand, and let's be honest right now, just historically speaking, Republicans were already poised to make big midterm wins because that is what historically happens when the presidency changes powers and blah, 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 and all that. And we all know that. So they already had the upper hand here. Where they got into trouble, obviously, is all this infighting that starts, and then your weird Madison Cawthorn stuff, and then your Lauren Boebert, and then going after Liz Cheney over here for not loving Trump, and then Trump coming back into the fold and endorsing just the worst of the worst. They take themselves down so frequently. And I think the Democrats get a little too complacent with it sometimes, saying, we just watch them fight. This is hilarious. People are turning off. But not enough people are turning off. You know, we can let them attack each other, but we got to come back in and finish it off. You know, we have to maybe fuel the fires, I guess, sometimes. And that's what should be happening.
You know, yeah, that's politics. Of course you have to fuel the fires. That's, you know, that's what you have to do. And by the way, you know, this midterm is a little different, even on the structural level. Historically speaking, the main reason why a midterm after a, you know, government changes partisan hands is because the coattails of the president, the one who won the presidency, tend to fall off in the midterm, that they just got dragged in with that. Well, that didn't happen in 2020. That there were no coattails. That just wasn't that kind of an election. And when that happens, the dynamic may be a little different than historically. Now, I'm not trying to blow smoke and say, you know, yes, the president's approval rating is very, you know, low, and that always is a drag on the party. But I will say this, that, you know, lately the generic, you know, numbers for the Democratic Party have been coming up. And granted, we know that structurally, that means Democrats still have to have like an 8-point, you know, margin in order to break even because, you know, of our great democratic system. But nonetheless, it is not hopeless. I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's not hopeless on a structural basis this time. But it's exactly what you say. You know, people don't know that the Republicans are shooting themselves in the foot if they're not paying attention. Or if they're not, you know, if they're not able to sort of discern what's going on, even on Fox News, they're getting, you know, if you're watching right wing media, you're in a bizarro world, right? You're in a completely different, on a different plane than the rest of the country. But a lot of people just don't understand exactly what's happening. That is the Democrats' job. I mean, yes, they're shooting themselves in the foot, but it doesn't mean anything if people don't know about it. If people don't really understand, it's not enough to stand up and just give a speech in front of the cameras and say, you know, those, you know, MAGA Republicans, they're really terrible. You know, you've got to do a serious, you know, information campaign like you just described. And, you know, go out on social media, and it's got to be disciplined, and it has to be, look, this is what we're dealing with. And, you know, they're afraid of that. Honestly, the Democrats think they want to run on the infrastructure bill, you know, and gee, things are the job numbers, you know, and it's, you know, I think we talked about this before. You know, you got to meet people where they are, and where they are is kind of freaked out because the world is very unsettled. And we just had, you know, they've got a case of collective mass PTSD over, you know, 4 years, 5 years of Trump, and then post-Trump, and the pandemic, of course. We've got wars in Europe. That's a little unsettling. Yeah. You've got this inflation, which is for many people have never experienced inflation in their lives. People are unsettled. People are freaked out. And you can't just sit there and come up to them and say, well, you should be feeling better about things than you do. You know, that is not a winning electoral message. So I say run against the other guys. They are weirdos, as James Carville said. These are a bunch of weirdos. They are, you know, tell people that. Let them know.
Well, and they are. And I think, you know, you made a great point when you talked about, you know, the Fox News viewership. Tucker Carlson, most watched person on cable news, 3 million a night, you know, on good nights. So what is that? Is it about 0.8% of the U.S. population, 0.8%? And hey, again, he's winning the ratings battles. But when we actually start to break it down that way, I think conservatively, 95% of this country is not consuming political news on a daily basis at all. Yeah. Again, they just go about their lives. And that's when you can get them, right? Those are the people who, yes, they have their political beliefs, but I think you can sway some of them because they're not being swayed by a Tucker Carlson or a Sean Hannity or, you know, Joe Rogan. But I think you can get to those people and just open their eyes a little bit and say, hey, you realize this is what this party has become. This is who they are. You know, Liz Cheney, who 10 years ago, we're all talking about how extreme and warmongering she is. Mitt Romney, who we all railed against in 2012 for his, you know, greed and obscene wealth and all that. These people look like, I mean, God, they look like total normal people. When you compare them to the people coming up, Sarah Palin doesn't seem as nuts anymore compared to this new crop of people. Christine O'Donnell putting out the I'm not a witch ad.
Right.
That wouldn't even make a headline today because of all the nutso people we have. And there was a time when that was like the worst of the worst that the Republican Party had, right? Mitt Romney saying, we've got binders full of women. That took him down in the polls. Today, you're going to get a standing ovation from Republicans for saying that.
Oh, my God. And far worse. I mean, you know, yeah, that would be, they wouldn't even notice if he said so, if someone said that. I mean, think about it. I think it was in 2012, Todd Akin, who was the, you know, running in Missouri, I think he ran against Claire McCaskill for the Senate, said, you know, there's such a thing as, you know, if a woman, they were talking about the rape exceptions, yep, right? If a woman was a victim of legitimate rape, it was legitimate, then maybe we would consider it. It was just a massive, you know, kind of, oh my God, what did he say? That's the most horrible thing in the world. It was grotesque, of course, you know, it was ridiculous. I mean, that's the kind of thing that is just totally common today. And in fact, he's considered the moderate in that because he was allowing some exception for somebody. Now there is just no exception for legitimate or illegitimate rape or any other kind of rape, including incest on some poor 12-year-old girl. That is their position now. That is, I mean, 11 states have passed laws that do have no exception now for rape and incest, in, you know, for abortion. This is where they've gone, and they've gone really fast. I mean, in 2019, Kevin McCarthy is quoted saying that's going too far. 2 years ago, you know, three, little over 2 years ago. And now You know, it's a totally common, reasonable, middle of the road position by Republicans. They will not condemn that. And that's one reason why Chuck Schumer really needs to bring that bill up on the Senate. Get those senators to vote on whether or not they believe there should be exceptions for rape and incest, because that is massively unpopular. Massively. I mean, we're talking like 90%, even pretty hardcore right-wing anti-abortion people. They're kind of iffy on that one.
Yeah. And you know, I do want to bring up, too, just to talk about how extreme this party has become. I'm going to take even further back than 2012. I don't know if you remember this. George Allen, the Republican, I forget where he was running, but he was at his little campaign thing, and there was the Oppo guy, and he referred to him as Makaka.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an Indian American. And that was one of the first, you know, when people started videoing and uploading, that was in the early days of YouTube. That ended George Allen's career.
It did.
But today, they can go out there and say horrible slurs about anyone they want. I mean, the video of Donald Trump mocking the reporter. I mean,
yeah.
And they cheer for it. George Allen would be a Republican hero today if he ran and said something like that. And that would be, you know, a hashtag on Twitter going around like, hey, let's start using this phrase. And that just shows you, and you and I have been in this for long enough to see it, see this creepy evolution that I really wish everybody else fully understood, because this ain't what it was 10 years ago. It sure as heck isn't what it was 20 years ago. No. And I shudder to think of what it's going to be 10 years from now. Are we going to be sitting here talking like, man, don't you miss the good old days of Matt Gaetz and the normal Republicans? But that,
well, I'm afraid that you and I probably won't be allowed to sit here and do this. they're not going to, you know, I mean, seriously, you know, you look at things like what Josh Hawley did. You know, we're going to remove, you know, Disney's copyright protections because they are woke. Now, there's a lot of arguments to be made about copyright protections. I'm not going to get into that. But the rationale for it, the rationale that they don't like their political views, and that's why they're going to use the strong arm of the government to punish them or to bring them in line, that is not Republicanism as we have known it in our lifetime. That's a new thing. And, well, it's not all that new. It kind of goes back to the 1930s in Europe. I mean, there was some of that. So, you know, we're talking about a very, very extreme movement that isn't just on the culture war stuff. This is on a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, what you see Ron DeSantis doing, well, you know better than anybody.
Yeah.
When you see what Ron DeSantis is doing, that is not your father's Republican Party. I mean, they have made a complete, you know, 180 in terms of their fundamental philosophy about government and small government and, you know, whether or not. I mean, they're out there railing. What was he did a thing where he's forcing students to learn about anti-communism now in the schools down there. And it's like, dude, you know, maybe you should take that class because you have more in common with the communists than Americans do. I mean, that kind of, you know, this kind of state authority, which they used to be completely railing against. Now, they're moving very swiftly toward that kind of nationalist authoritarian system, more like, you know, someone like Viktor Orban in Hungary is really the model there, which includes all this culture war stuff, by the way, because Orban, totally anti-immigration, you know, wanting women to, you know, have many more children, you know, there's all that kind of stuff going on there too. But that's the model that we're seeing. And I am absolutely positive that people don't see it. I'm not sure the Democratic Party sees it. I'm not sure that they're really, I mean, there are a few, there are some members of Congress and, you know, elected officials who you'll see say stuff, you know, like Sheldon Whitehouse or Brian Schatz in the Senate, you know, people like that who are savvy about it. Certainly Jamie Raskin and some of the January 6th people are aware. But, I mean, this is a creeping, and it's not creeping that slowly. I mean, it's happening pretty fast. A sort of a takeover of the Republican Party into a right-wing nationalist authoritarian movement. And the fact that they have now, you know, packed the Supreme Court with members of that movement who, you know, wait till you see what they do with laws that aren't culture war laws. Because, I mean, they're going to be even wilder. You know, we are dealing with something very scary. So when I say, you know, 10 years from now, you and I may not be allowed to do this, I'm being serious. I mean, I'm sure that that is a possibility unless the American people wake up and put a stop to it before it goes any further.
Absolutely. But you know what? For right now, you and I are allowed to do this. And Heather Parton Digby, salon.com, I love talking with you. And as long as we're legally allowed to do it, I'm going to continue doing this. So thank you very much for spending all this time with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Everybody's wondering right now who is going to be the next Donald Trump if Donald Trump does not stay to be the current Donald Trump. It's a weird situation, but I think a lot of us looking at the situation understand that the next Donald Trump is already here and he's already out trumping Trump. And that is, of course, Ron DeSantis here in Florida. Joining me to talk about this is author, writer, and now, of course, YouTube channel Cliff Schechter. Cliff.
From what I heard, that's where all the cool people go is YouTube. So yeah, that's where I went.
And I'm loving it. It's youtube.com/C Schechter, the letter C, then Schechter. Everybody, yes, check it out. Great channel, Cliff. Always a great guy. And of course, you're a favorite here at Ring of Fire. So welcome back.
Thank you.
We have so much to talk about right now. And I love talking with you because we always just kind of go everywhere in our conversation. So it's so much fun. But let's start right here where I am in the state of Florida. A ton of really just absolutely obscene abuses of power taking place in this state right now. And a lot of it, of course, does have to do with what I see as Ron DeSantis trying to out Trump Trump.
Yes.
I think that's what's behind most of what we see right now.
Oh, I would say almost all of it. I mean, the sad thing, you know, I've talked about this a bunch, is that it's not policy anymore at this point. I'm not sure what I'm allowed to say on this channel, so I'll be careful with the words I use. But it's really, honestly, the Republican primaries are about who's a bigger a-hole, is what they're about. It's about who can be the nastiest, the cruelest, who can ignore democracy and take dictatorial-like power to beat down. We were talking about a little earlier about bullying. Who can bully, you know, anybody from kids up on a stage who are wearing masks, which DeSantis did only a month ago or whatever, to bullying, you know, companies that don't toe the line. And I mean, that's the thing, is he's performing right now. He's performing for what Trump has radicalized, Trump and Fox and others have radicalized the Republican base into, which are these, they're like, you have to imagine like the people underneath the stairs now or something. They're like these creatures, these fire-breathing creatures that just want vitriol and they want to see someone getting hurt. I mean, I hate that it's this way, but this is the truth. And DeSantis is literally just playing to that. That's what all of this is about.
Well, and, you know, DeSantis, like so many other Republican governors, obviously a lot of it all throughout the South and the Midwest, they had kind of all been going back and forth. You know, Georgia does something extreme, Florida does it, Texas does it, then Oklahoma. But really within the last month, Florida here has just taken every piece of it and put it on steroids. Like, okay, Texas, you've got an abortion ban. Well, guess what? We're going to go more extreme than that. Oh,
right.
You're banning critical race theory, whatever they think critical race theory is, up in Tennessee. Well, guess what? We're not only going to do that, we're going to ban math books because
That's
we
right.
don't understand. I mean, he just wants to
They're filled with CRT, though, so be careful.
and it is ridiculous. In fact, the banning of those math books is based on a photoshopped image that Christina Pushaw, I guess, saw online, and she's sharing it. She's like, here it is. And the funniest part is even the photoshopped image isn't even critical race theory. It's actually just talking about Maya Angelou. It's
right.
So ridiculous.
Exactly. It's not critical race theory. And in the end, it wasn't part of the book either.
Yeah.
It was like something that a company put up, like a spread or a worksheet that they took it down.
And so that's what they're, that's their justification for it, of course. But they don't even need justification. They could just come out and do these things. And far too many people in these states will be like, yes, this is what we want. And meanwhile, we actually have very real problems all throughout the country, a lot of it at the state level. And that ends up getting blamed on Biden. You know, we see down here in Florida, our prices are skyrocketing, not due to inflation, due to corporate greed. Well, they're blaming Biden. DeSantis is blaming Biden. But those are his problems that he has let fester. And it's just, oh, no, I'm focusing on math books. Biden's the one to blame for all these price increases you're paying.
Right. Excuse me. And of course, you know, part of that's also Greg Abbott blocking the trucks from coming in with food and foods being spoiled. I mean, they're just such evil people. I don't know what else to call them. And the thing is you're right. DeSantis is in the lead now, but it's like a constant horse race with DeSantis and Abbott, each trying to, of course, my phone rings, each trying to be more nasty than the other. Because in the end, look, there are some others that are trying to compete. Kim Reynolds up in Iowa, or what's her name? The cowboy hat wearing one, Gnome, in South Dakota. But those aren't big states. Those aren't states that like Republicans need to hold on to or need to win. They can try all they want. It doesn't matter. It's not going to, you know, they're not going to be the ones to go to the front of the line. It's going to be DeSantis or Abbott because of the states they're from, because their personas, because the guys they are. And so they're each trying to out-awful the other one because, again, this sad state of affairs we've come to where literally that's how you get a Republican nomination is by being a more awful human being. And you're right. I mean, DeSantis, it's like one thing after another, the abortion ban and the math books. And now today taking away the, you know, taking away the Disney's special tax status. And, you know, there'll be something else tomorrow and the next day. And because that's it. It's all just about playing to the mouth breathers and being a Republican nominee for president.
And here's the thing, though. And, you know, you touched on this. When you have Abbott actually doing these things, you have DeSantis actually doing these things, and then you compare that with Donald Trump. What is Donald Trump doing? Well, Donald Trump is going out there still crying about the 2020 election and getting in fights with his friends. That's bad for Trump. Because when suppose we actually have a real Republican primary in 2024 and you put these people up on stage, Abbott gets to brag about the things he actually did. DeSantis will do the same. Ted Cruz, I'm sure, will attempt to. But then Trump has nothing. And that is actually what is starting to worry some of those advisors in Trump world, saying these people are accomplishing things. You're still talking about something that's now 18 months old that nobody wants to hear about anymore. And that's why I do think DeSantis has emerged as the new Trump, and honestly, probably a far more dangerous Trump because he is accomplishing these things.
Correct. First of all, Trump, part of Trump's obsessiveness, nastiness, vindictiveness, you know, was a lot of what was appealing to people. But they're all, you know, in that Republican base. But there always were these times where he took certain things too far because he was so obsessed with them that nobody else cared about. Remember him talking about like the toilets flushing constantly, like the water in the toilets is terrible. And everybody's like, what are you talking about? Dude, like, go take your meds and take a nap or something, man. Well, this is, you know, he can't let the election go because it's part of his ego. It's like this, it's the double-edged sword of his obsessions, which worked for him at times, but now he can't let it go. Most people on the Republican Party didn't want to hear this anymore 6 months after the election. It's the reason why he unendorsed, you know, Mo Brooks, who was one of his most staunch defenders in Alabama, because Mo Brooks is like, why are we still talking about this? Even the other crazy people have looked at Donald Trump and said, you're freaking crazy. And so I do. I think there's even a point where these right-wing nuts are like, you know, are at a place where the rest of us were at, like right after the election. They're like, okay, enough. Talk about what, you know, do things and talk about what you're going to do. And DeSantis is doing that. They're awful things. He's hurting people. He basically whistled past the graveyard on COVID and let God knows how many people die. You know, he and Abbott can have a die-off where they can see Abbott and be like, I let more people die when I didn't fix the power lines, or I let more people die when I did this. Or, I mean, they're both awful human beings, but they're doing things, right? They're doing things that their you know, base, their bloodlust base wants. So I agree. All Trump's doing is just hanging out, you know, eating potato chips and sweating at Mar-a-Lago. And so I do. I think his advisors are very worried. It was interesting. I'll say this quickly. Farron, you know, he did bring up, like, I don't remember when this was, a couple weeks ago, when they asked if he was going to run for re-election. I found it really interesting that for the first time he was like, well, if my health is up to it. Trump would never, ever bring that up unless that was a way of him getting out of doing something he didn't want to do. This is the guy, strong like Tiger, that, you know, drunk Ronnie Jackson was saying was going to live till he was like 380, till he's like Methuselah or something, right? But now we're like, now he's saying his health. I have a feeling he's worried he's going to lose to these guys, and he's putting up an out ramp if he needs it.
Right, and yeah, I agree with you 100%, because I think even if Trump had health problems, I mean, he would never admit it, you know.
Right.
So him actually bringing that up, it does raise a red flag, not because I think you have health. Well, I do think you have health issues, don't get me wrong, but I don't think you would ever, like, he could have a tumor growing out of the back of his head with its own face on it, and he would still run for office, and everybody would say that's how a head is supposed to look. So him talking about that, I do think he sees himself diminishing in power. He'll never admit it. But I think another very telling thing was this past weekend, and we got to see the video all over social media, Roger Stone walking up to Trump at Mar-a-Lago with the, hey, how you doing? Pulls him in close, says, Ron DeSantis is a piece of shit. Okay.
Yep.
You know, I would love to know the rest of that conversation, because obviously the camera's cut off. But Trump understands. He has people telling him, like, this guy, and it's,
yep.
Roger Stone doesn't
inevitable.
Think he is, but it's Roger Stone thinks this guy's going to beat you and you're doing nothing about it.
Right. I mean, and look, it's inevitable. I mean, look at any despotic regime, right? Like, if you're the number two guy, if you were next to Saddam Hussein or Idi Amin or Mao, at some point, like, you know, you see them looking at you a little funny, you're like, they're probably going to kill me. You know, like they love them. You know, he endorsed DeSantis initially for governor. They love them until they get to the point where they get their own media and they start getting powerful and they become a threat. So Trump loved the guy, you know, when he was president. Once he was gone, all these guys were going to jockey for power because that's all they care about in the end. I mean, they've proven it once again, right? Like we were talking as the show was starting about these attacks on Disney. You know, they claim they're for free markets. They're not for free markets. They're not for balanced budgets. They're not for being tough on Russia. They're not for any number of things they say they're for. What they are for in the end is like doing whatever is advantageous to hold and gain power. And right now, DeSantis and Abbott and I'm sure others, but they're the two, I think, at the front because of where they're from. Like they see this opportunity. And so I think you've got purposely, you know, Roger Stone saying that to make sure the media can hear it. You know, like he's trying in his own way, Trump is, to diminish DeSantis. I'm not sure what he can do from there to do it. You know, maybe he's still got friendly people in various prosecutors' offices and he can get some you know, investigations started. But, and I think, actually, I should say quickly, that's the other problem, is I think a lot of other Republicans are just tired of all the legal stuff. They're tired of the fact that the Attorney General in New York and the January 6th committee and, you know, the DOJ and Fulton County in Georgia, and just there's a billion different investigations into Trump, and like none of them are, they should be investigations into Abbott for why he didn't go and make sure that the power lines could survive a winter storm. There should be investigations into DeSantis, why he hid science and hid the number of people dying and did things so more people died of COVID. I can think of a lot of investigations of both those guys that should be happening, but there aren't any that I'm aware of. So, like, all these legal troubles around Trump, and I think a lot of other conservatives, particularly the funders, they're just like, we don't need this. You know what I mean?
Well, and, you know, you and I actually had a very interesting conversation a couple days ago, you know, not on Ring of Fire here, but just a friendly chat. And you and I got into the issue. Obviously, we talk about Republicans a lot, but we also started talking about people like Joe Manchin. You know,
yep.
Manchin is a huge problem for the Democratic Party in getting anything at all done. Kyrsten Sinema, same way. So, of course, we look at the Republicans and we see this utter insanity of them actually doing things to harm us. Like, they're mm-hmm. causing real harm. So, on the Democratic side, we have people blocking progress. You know, it prevents us from moving forward, but hey, at least it's not us moving backwards. And I bring that up to bring up this point. You don't like Joe Manchin. I don't like Joe Manchin.
No.
Everybody outside of West Virginia does not like Joe Manchin.
I think a lot of people even in West Virginia. And in fact, he got into a lawsuit with his brother over some finances. His own brother doesn't like him. So, you know, just to be clear.
And the problem is the voters in West Virginia, unfortunately, do. And so we're looking at a situation right now. And this is what people have to understand, whether it's the Republicans or Democrats. Oh, we don't have our preferred candidate. We need somebody that's more progressive or somebody that every place is different. You cannot run a campaign with a you know, Bernie Sanders, who I supported, but you couldn't run Bernie Sanders in my district where Matt Gaetz is running and have him win. You simply could not do it.
Nope.
So as bad as Joe Manchin is, and I want him out of office, it's not going to happen. And if it does happen, you end up with somebody worse than Joe Manchin. And as you and I had discussed, a lot of it has to do with I'm in Florida, a red state. You're in Ohio, a true swing state.
We're both in what 8 years ago were swing states that now, if we're being honest, we'd call reddish purple states.
Yeah.
Democrats can still win, but we lean red.
But we get to see firsthand really both sides. And
yes.
So we, and I'm not saying you and I are just, we're the best because of this. But it is
we're the best for a lot of other reasons.
It's a different perspective than what some of these other folks get. If you're in your, you know, very liberal LA bubble, of course you think that, you know, everything is liberal and everything is great and we can be more liberal. But when you're out here in red state America, it sucks to have to say it, but I'm telling you, you can't. You know?
You need a coalition. That's the whole thing about democracy. Look, Joe Manchin is uniquely terrible. Okay, he's uniquely terrible in that I honestly think Kyrsten Sinema may have caved if Manchin weren't standing there in the way that he was. He has harmed us. I mean, some folks were asking questions like, can you think of a past case where one Democratic senator did this much damage? Because that's one of the reasons that Biden's approval rating has fallen, and some of the other things have happened. And again, you know, you need to be able to, what so many people can't do in politics is separate emotion from analysis.
Yeah.
My emotion is I can't stand Joe Manchin. My analysis is if I'm voting for him or a Republican and he's the 50th vote, I'm voting for him. Like, I mean, I don't understand. There's not even a debate to be had here. I mean, what in your state, Nikki Fried has done some controversial things over the past couple of days.
Oh, I know.
I think what she's doing is self-immolation to her campaign and completely inane. But if she's the nominee over Annette Tadeo and Charlie Crist, who I think are the three, maybe I'm missing one or two other folks running, that's who I'm supporting if I live in Florida. Like, these are not hard decisions. You can't make decisions like you make. Like, you know, here's what somebody always said to me, an old political consultant I was friends with, who's like, you're voting for who best represents your values. You're not marrying them. Okay? Like, you're not saying you love Joe Manchin or Nikki Fried. You don't have to spend the rest of your lives with them. But my God, look at what the Republican Party has done. So, and you even need to separate the situations like themselves. I mean, so what do I mean by that? Kyrsten Sinema, when she's up in 2024, she's got something like a 12% approval rating in the Democratic Party, right? In Arizona. Arizona's trending Democratic. Biden won there. We've won the last two Senate races. We've won a couple other statewide races. She can be tossed in a primary and we can get somebody more progressive in Arizona. And she should be. So that's a realistic analysis, not based on my emotion, because I can't stand either of them. But a realistic analysis of West Virginia is it's like the third most Republican state, I think, in the country. I think Trump got 67% or 8 or whatever there. We're not getting anybody else besides Joe Manchin, who's a Democrat. So if Manchin's that last one who's going to give us that extra vote, we got to keep him. If you want to say we don't need him anymore, if we can knock off, you know, used car salesman Marco Rubio in your state and the two lunatics, we can hold off J.D. Vance and Josh Mandel and put Tim Ryan in office in this state and a bunch of others, and then we end up having 55 senators, yeah, at that point you may consider Manchin not worth the trouble. But if he's the 50th or 51st or something vote, we need him. And, like, people need to understand that.
Yeah, and of course, just like we do, continue call him out every time he does these things.
But absolutely.
The best bet is not to replace him with, you know, the next Jeff Merkley or Elizabeth Warren. The best bet is to is to make him irrelevant, like you said.
Yes.
You know, have enough Democrats where if Manchin says, I'm going to vote with Republicans, it's all right, whatever, go do your thing, man. We're not even
paying
attention.
No one was talking to you anyhow.
Yeah. So that's the goal here. And again, the reason it is important is because of what we are fighting on this other side, with people yes. literally fighting to live their lives as who they are. And they're not even yes. allowed. I mean, Florida this week, at, you know, after the math books, after the Disney thing, then the health department issues this new decree where you can't even, you can't change a kid's pronouns. You can't let them change a pronouns. You can't let them change clothing to the opposite gender. We have now, from the state health department, and this just.
Are you serious?
Yes, you cannot wear the opposite gender's clothing for these kids and send them out. It's, I've.
What would glam metal bands do?
Yeah.
Like my 15-year-old is a drummer in a rock band and loves Aerosmith and like Guns N' Roses. And like sometimes because of that, he's like worn like women's leather coats and things because it's cool stuff. So seriously, if he were in your state, they would, what would they do? Would they grab my kid and like rip the clothes off him? Are they crazy?
That's the level of insanity that these Republicans are inflicting upon people. And so we have to understand that, listen, Manchin sucks. Is he better than every Republican out there? I think so, yes. And yep. I've often said, you know, Manchin actually just was down here in Florida, I think this past weekend, at a massive Republican fundraiser. They were raising money for him. And they want him to run as a Republican in 2024. And I talked about this in a segment. I said, I would not want him to be a Republican president, but I guarantee you, if he were, he'd be the best Republican president that we have had in, you know, 60 years.
Yes.
Because he's
certainly since like Gerald Ford, I would say.
Yeah.
In terms of how moderate. Yeah.
But he's still probably worse than all of the Democrats, better than all of the Republicans. So he's in this weird situation. Same thing with Sinema. Yes, she needs to get out of office. We need to do something about that. But we also,
if she's the nominee and you live in Arizona and it's her versus a Republican,
yeah.
you must. I mean, you're crazy not to vote for her again. Like, this is not about your personal anger. It's not about like your resentment for these people for how they behave. I have all of that too. But in the end, think about like, you know, what bills get passed, and think about the fact that how close we were to, you know, and not, I mean, we had at least three Republican votes, thankfully, but we maybe could have not gotten our Supreme Court justice on the court. You know, like these things matter. And so, you know, separate, you know, as they used to say, compartmentalize it. Over here, you know, you can hate Manchin and Sinema as much as you want, but when it comes time to vote, if they are the nominee, and I think there's a good chance that you can stop Sinema from being the nominee if you're yeah. in Arizona and get somebody better like Ruben Gallego, who's been making noises about primarying her. But I promise you, unless like something insane happens, the level of like the aliens from Independence Day coming down right now, you're not going to get a better Democrat than Joe Manchin in West Virginia. You're just not, because Democrats are an endangered species there. They barely exist.
Well, and, you know, it's things like that, too, that really kind of bug me, I guess I would say, like with Mitch McConnell and his Senate race. I forget who the Democrat was up against him. Who?
Amy McGrath.
And there's all of this money, millions and millions and millions of dollars flowing from all over the country into Amy McGrath. And nothing against her. I know she was a very conservative Democrat. But at the same time, you're not going to unseat Mitch McConnell. You're absolutely no. not. They love him in Kentucky. I mean, each state is so different. And I do right. wish people got out a little bit more. Whereas down here in Florida, yes, DeSantis, his approval rating is over 50%, but it is below 60%. So there's room. There is room.
And we need to do better, you know, our side in getting the message out there about who he is. Some of this is on us, you know, and yeah. I don't blame you and me. I can blame myself for plenty of things, so I'm not making excuses. But there are actual groups tied to the Democratic Party whose job it is to do these things. And I don't know what they're doing. Pick the three narratives you want to tell about him, because there's 15 different negative ones. Pick the three that are easy for people to remember and go at them and repeat them every day, every minute, constantly. You can knock that guy's approval rating below 50%. You really can. It's not Alabama. It's not Kentucky. It's Florida. You lean what? 3 points Republican or something like that at this point, maybe less, you know, and that's where we are too here. Sherrod Brown wins here. because he knows how to run here. You know, I mean, we elected a Supreme Court justice here last year, statewide. She knew Jennifer Bruner. She knew how to run here. She was a former Secretary of State and had some name recognition and ran a smart race. Like, we can do it. You guys can do it. You've elected statewide Democrats. Like, you know, just please, the organizations whose job it is to message, can you guys, like, go and tell people the true story of DeSantis? You know, please?
Yeah.
We're begging you.
And you know, I'll tell you another thing we need is we need more Stacey Abrams. We absolutely need what she did in Georgia. And yes, I'm giving her almost all of the credit for that. Is nothing short of miraculous, but it's also proof that, look, when you put in this groundwork, and it took years of groundwork, this is not just something you pop in for 3 months for an election and say, I'm changing things. She worked for so long and so hard to actually change things, and it worked. And that's why the Republicans in Georgia panicked. They passed that hugely, you know, suppressive new voting law. And it was basically because Stacey Abrams.
She was so successful.
Yep. She got up and she did something. She didn't sulk after her loss. She didn't sit there and say, oh, well, this group didn't come out, or this group was too mean to me. It was none of that. It was like, you know what? All right, fine. I'm going to change the state. I'm going to make things better. You know, none of this. The establishment was against me. The progressives were against, you know, we spend so much time, I think, on the left blaming one another instead of doing what Stacey.
And our labels are actually often so stupid.
They are. Because, they truly are.
Because you could, if you looked at who I've worked for in my record, you know, and everything, I wrote ads for Joe Biden this past time. I'm establishment. But then I also did work for Ned Lamont when he took on Joe Lieberman and tried to kick him out. I'm progressive, you know, like, I mean, in the end, I'm more, I consider myself progressive, but I also consider myself a Democrat, and Democrats, as you pointed out before, will always be better than Republicans, always. So, you know, you work for who's there, and you work, I mean, again, who is the best person of who's available? This is not like, you know, we're not in Disney World, sorry, I just got that in there, where everything's perfect and wonderful, except for, you know, in Ron DeSantis's world. Where dreams come true or whatever, you're in a world where you have a set number of candidates, and whoever the best one is in your estimation, that's as good as it's going to get. And they may disagree with you on a half dozen issues or a dozen issues or whatever, but okay. Like, you go and you do your best, because if they will make things a little bit better or a lot better than the person who's there now, than the Republican, I mean, it's common sense. I just wish people would step back from all the emotion and name calling you pointed out. Progressive establishment, blah, blah. You're evil. You suck. You know, you didn't get behind Bernie. You didn't get behind Hillary. I mean, can we just let all that stupid stuff go? We're on the same side. We want the same things. You know, even if we don't always believe in exactly the same way to get there. Like, the end goals are the same, you know?
Yeah. And you know, I still, to this day, don't understand what all the anti-Elizabeth Warren stuff was about in 2020. I still don't get that. I mean, there's so many people out there that are still like, oh, I can't believe she – okay, she didn't endorse Bernie when you wanted her to. Besides, what does that mean? That all of her policies, which I got to tell you, policy-wise, in 2020, she was kind of, you know, really – the top.
She owned it, man.
She
and
did.
Some of her policies are still that she came up with are still out there debated now. Things like the wealth tax and other things. We're talking about stuff that she came up with.
People want to hate her. I guess that's your choice. I love her. I don't hold anything against her. She did what she chose to do. And if you want to go out there and whine and moan about something Elizabeth Warren did or didn't do at a certain time that pleased you, well, guess what? Get the hell out of the way, because you're a Joe Manchin, just in a different way. You're the one blocking
Thank
progress
you.
At this point.
Yeah, I don't really care if you come from the far, let's call it either the radical left or the radical center. Like, if you're in either wing of the Democratic Party where you're blocking things from happening because you're too good for the rest of us, we're all too left for you, or we're all too corporate for you, or whatever your, you know, your insult du jour is, well, then you're the problem. You know, there used to be an old saying, and I heard you curse, so I know I can say it, which is, If you walk around all day, every day, you know, and you're like, wow, that guy's an asshole. That guy's an asshole. And everybody else is an asshole. It turns out you're the asshole. That's the actual truth. If you find enough other people, because it says something about you. So you know what? Like, let that stuff go. Elizabeth Warren may not have done exactly what you wanted when you wanted her to do it. I may not agree with Elizabeth Warren on 100% of policies. I'm sure I don't. Don't care. She's done a great job. She's come up with a lot of great stuff. I would have been happy to support her for president. I'm happy to support her right now. You know, hell, if she wanted to be Senate Majority Leader right now, count me as somebody who would jump in behind there and be very excited about it. But, I mean, you know, just save the ire for the people that are trying to turn us into a fascist country, please. Yeah. Like, save the ire for the authoritarians who are trying to overthrow democracy. I mean, come on.
You know, it really is amazing. You know, you can either waste all your time complaining that we, you know, don't have student loan debt forgiveness yet, which I talk about that all the time, too. We need it. Sure. We should have it. But you can either piss and moan about that and go pout, or you can also say, well, we may not have student loan debt forgiveness, but they're literally killing people over here on this other side. They're taking away suicide prevention protection from this other side. They're going to be killing women with their policies. So I guess I'm okay, you know, with not having the debt forgiveness if it means saving lives of people over here. I mean, it's such a
perspective,
really,
is what's really, really needed here. And beyond even those lives, every single thing that we care about, every single thing that we want to see happen during our lifetimes, if we lose our democracy, none of that happens.
Right.
If we become like, no, do I think we're going to probably become like a Nazi Germany? I don't. Could I see us becoming Hungary? Absolutely. There's a reason they love Orban. He took a liberal democracy and he turned it to an illiberal democracy. Oh, they still have elections and people still get elected. Look at your state legislatures, your gerrymandered state legislatures. It's like that. You'll still elect. I mean, I'm talking about Ohio, you know, where they're still trying to fight fair maps that we should have. The, you know, out of 99 state house members or whatever it is, yeah, we'll still elect 35 who are complete liberals. They'll just will never be enough to actually do anything that we want done. That is an illiberal democracy. You keep having elections, there's the facade you're in a democracy, but then you have stuff like that happen. You have 35-year-old, you know, who look like they're 12, you know, judges who know nothing about health policy, overturning, you know, mask requirements on airplanes. Somebody who was rated not qualified by the ABA, somebody who had never tried a case before and never has in her life. You know, was probably still coloring in crayon books when Trump came in and said, we're going to make her a judge. And those Republicans who were just so freaked out about Ketanji Brown Jackson's qualifications, even though she was more qualified than all of them put together, public defender and all the things she did, they had no problems rubber stamping the Mizell, I guess is her name, this judge at the age of 33 to put her on a court when she had literally I'm not even sure she knew what the law was. You know what I mean? Like, have you seen that decision?
Oh, yeah. And she'll be there for, you know, as long as her health keeps
2070?
Up. 50 years. I mean, you know, maybe 60 years, depending on how far medical advancements come. And
I will likely be dead, and she'll still be on that court. And of old age, if I'm lucky enough to get there.
And that's what's so terrifying about this. And you know what? Just one final point here. When you bring up Ketanji Brown Jackson, that's a good example of probably like the most progressive pick Biden could have done for the Supreme Court. You know, there were plenty of other, you know, more corporatist people. So you also can't just say, well, Biden's not progressive enough. Look, he's not progressive enough on certain things. Sure. But we got a massive win with that Supreme Court pick. And that is something everybody should celebrate, you know, for so many different reasons, but especially the public defender background. Yep. Representation matters. Somebody coming from that background matters. And that is a huge deal.
And where she is, you are 100% right that she's probably going to join. She's a brilliant jurist also. And she's probably going to join Sotomayor as this sort of conscience. Say the word right, of the Supreme Court. We'll have now these two strong female women of color left voices speaking out who know what they're talking about because who've had to go through things. None of most of us, me and you certainly haven't had to go through in our lives to get to where they are. And I'm sorry, unless you have to kick me off for time quickly, because I just get so tired of it. Is Biden perfect? This and that, whatever. The number of executive orders on climate, on guns that have improved things. That COVID bill was one of the biggest bills and most successful bills since LBJ in terms of child tax credit, in terms of getting shots into arms. So at least even with anti-vaxxers, we got closer to 70%, which reinvigorated our economy to the point where we're at 3.6% unemployment. And, we were creating 500,000 jobs a month. He helped pass an infrastructure bill with Republicans to actually do it. That we have two bridges near here in Cincinnati that were considered structurally unsound. I haven't driven over them in years because I don't want my kids to go flying into the water. And they're now fixing them with that money. I mean, I'm sorry. And that's creating jobs for people too. I'm not saying he's perfect, but my God, to act like this guy hasn't come in and done a bunch of very progressive things is just to not tell the truth.
There are plenty of accomplishments, but part of the reason why people aren't talking about these is because the Democrats are also terrible at messaging.
Well, that's a whole other conversation. We suck.
Because those are the things that should be running in ads right now. And another message for the Democratic Party, you don't have to wait for campaigns to run ads. You can buy airtime at any point in any year.
And it's like available and you can purchase it with goods and services and the whole economy and everything. I mean, you're so right. I didn't mean to cut you off, but
it's fine.
This is you went into one of my areas because I just lose it on this, paid media, but not even that. You can have a press conference a week to tell you, here's the terrible stuff the Republicans did this week. We're going to come out in front of Congress, and in every state house where you've got a gerrymandered state house, we're going to have Democrats come out and hold a press conference. You can come up with interesting events. Like we did events here, in 2018 to get media attention. We had a big Trump chicken we brought out.
Yeah.
Things that will get the media's attention so that they actually pay attention to stuff. You can do that. You can do paid media. You can do earned media. You can do social media. You can be on there every day with the same tweet saying to people, here's a reminder of what Biden has done. Here's a reminder of what Trump did. So it doesn't go down the memory hole. You can be doing these things constantly. It's called messaging. It's marketing 101. Please.
Well, I mean, that's why Trump, every time he's in front of a camera, says the 2020 election was stolen. And now you have a majority of Republicans that actually do believe it. So maybe Democrats maybe use some of their strategy, not of course to lie to people.
Right. So he lied about that. So what if every time Biden and everybody got in front of a camera, we just said we have the best jobs economy in 60 years, which is true. What if we just said that every time?
That
would seem to be a good idea.
We could. And if they want to, go the route of lying, Biden could go up there and just be like, hey, you know what? There's no unemployment. Everybody in this country has a job. I mean, no, he shouldn't do that.
That's true.
But really, with the amount of lies coming from the other side, because that's all they have, the Democratic messaging it doesn't exist. And as you've just kind of pointed out, there are so many things to do. So, hey, strategists, lobbyists, whoever you are, if you're watching, if you're listening, there you go. There's
Please,
lots
do it
to do.
In a coordinated way with paid and earned and social, all coordinated and spokespeople out there and policy initiatives and everything, and make it all into a narrative about who you are. What's your story? Here's who we are. Here's what we came into and fixed. Here's the bad guys. They did these terrible things. We're the good guys. We came in, we fixed those things. And here's three examples. And your life is better because of it. This it just drives me nuts. It's not difficult and we don't do it. And that's why you're right. And that's why some of the reason Biden's numbers are so low. I mean, there's other reasons. Mainstream media is awful and the right-wing media lies all the time. But you know what? Here's my hope. Democrats can just tell the truth as often and effectively as Republicans lie. That's all I want out of life.
And
if we could just do that.
Yeah. It's very easy to do, but for some reason we're not doing it. Hey, Cliff Schechter, the YouTube channel is youtube.com/C Schechter.
And Schechter is S-C-H-E-C-T-E-R. We cut off the second H on the boat over. from, by the way, Odessa, one of the places that Putin has chosen to attack. So I take it even more personally. But yeah, it's youtube.com/C Schechter, S-C-H-E-C-T-E-R. I'm going to be doing a lot of commentary today. I can't promise you I'll be nearly as good as Farron, because Farron is Farron, but I will do my best. Please come by and check the channel out.
Absolutely. And Cliff, again, you're welcome here anytime. We love having you on. This has been a wonderful conversation today. We covered so much more than I even thought we would, but all of it very informative, all of it fun. And I hope everybody enjoyed it. And again, if you want more of it, youtube.com/C Schechter. Follow him on Twitter at Cliff Schechter, I believe it is.
That's right. Yep.
I knew your name. so thank you, Cliff, so much.
It's a start, baby.
And,
thanks, buddy. I really appreciate it.
We will have you on again. Thank you.
Sounds like a plan. Take care.
And that's it for this week's Ring of Fire. Hopefully I will be back to 100% next week with some brand new content for you. But in the meantime, if you want to get access to the entire Ring of Fire archives, plus access to the full show every single week, go sign up and become a member at rofpodcast.com. And for fresh Ring of Fire content 7 days a week, subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. I'm Farron Cousins, and you can follow me across social media, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Farron Balanced. Have a wonderful week, folks. Like I said in the beginning, please continue to protect yourselves. COVID is real. COVID is still there. And COVID is not something that you want to mess with if you have not had it yet. And even if you have, I'm sure you understand that already. So please mask up, get vaccinated, get boosted if you haven't already. And we'll talk to you next week.